and welcome to New in Events, a podcast from IBTM with me, Shanali Devereaux. This is your go-to podcast for fresh insights and practical takeaways, whether you are new to the meetings, incentive, conference and events sector or a seasoned professional. You'll hear from industry leaders, discover innovative solutions, explore evolving trends and get inspired to take your events to the next level. So let's get on with the show. I am so excited to bring you this episode because this episode for me is both about personal resilience and organizational resilience. And we have two fantastic speakers who are really well versed in both of those topics. The first gentleman I talked to is Mike Ford, who's founder and owner of Grateful Lemon. And he brings his experience of twice having been an agency owner and then experienced burnout himself to derive a methodology that has taken his mess into his message, and he now helps organizations and individuals look at strategies that help them burn bright instead of burning out. He talks about how the way we work in the events industry perhaps doesn't work for us. And that's not about the rhythm of the events industry, but it's about the personal and organizational responsibility that we can take. And part of that is about our attitude to stress. And this is where the interview I recorded on the show floor at IBTM with Bo Kruger, who's a speaker moderator and meeting designer for Moving Minds, comes into it as well. Both of them talk about how stress is a positive thing and about how your mindset towards stress and how you can train your mind as a muscle helps you in your personal and professional lives. He also talks about dopamine, oxytocin, and how the yes and mindset can be a game changer for creativity and innovation at work, something very close to my heart. Mike, thank you for joining me in the podcast studio. Tell us a bit about your background and what brought you to where you are now.
I've been in the industry what seems like forever, 30 plus years, a couple of agencies in that time, built them up, sold them, and then fell out of the industry about 5 years ago, literally fell out of the industry, which I'll share. Always been driven, very passionate about this industry. I was leading an agency called Touch about 5 years ago. We'd got ourselves through COVID. Then I fell out of it, made a decision at a moment in time during a family holiday in Croatia. Do you remember during COVID that year after where we had green, red, green, amber and red destinations? We managed to get away to Croatia and I was sat having a board call and it just hit me that actually I needed to cut all ties. I'd lost connection with family. I'd lost connection with the business. I'd lost connection with me. And I look back now, 5 years on, and realize that actually that was all down to me. No one else's fault. I'd lost myself physically, mentally, emotionally, and that's now defined as burnout. So I was one of those examples. Quite ironic for someone that's always had performance and sport. And I think my learning really is a case study of that. It's not something that you get hit by a train or you fall over and have a heart attack. It doesn't work like that. So actually I've spent the last 5 years understanding, working with some of the best people, fortunately I had access to some of the best people in sport, personal development, nutritional psychiatry, personal health, science, to build out what is now Grateful Lemon, which is a consultancy helping event organizations, leaders, teams, specifically in the event hospitality sector.
I think it's absolutely needed because burnout is a word that we band about in the industry all of the time. I want to come back to that moment because you were talking about it's not necessarily that you get hit by a train or you have a heart attack or whatever it is. There was a moment for you though in Grocery. Do you remember around that moment how you felt and what it was that brought you to that point?
So I had my wife and three children with me. They were up the mountain doing activity. I was on the call with board directors of the agency and I'm at this beach club because it's the only place I could find Wi-Fi. With all these amazing people having an amazing time on the beach. And I was completely disconnected with every single aspect. I wasn't with my family, most important people in my life. I wasn't really connected with the work and I wasn't connected with where I was. And I'm like, what am I doing? And it was a moment I went, I'm done. I didn't know what that meant. At the time, there was all these other people and situations to blame. But actually looking back, the only one to blame that got myself in that situation was me. They say, change happens in a variety of ways. And one of them is when the pain of not changing is greater than the pain of the change. And I just knew at that point that was it. So I came back and literally, I was one of the major shareholders in the agency. I had no idea what it meant. I said, I'm done, I'm out. And from that day, I was out.
Gosh, that's really significant. It's great not only that you recognize that moment, but then you took action. You said you came back and then you were out. Do you remember what the first action you took following the epiphany was?
Yeah, telling my wife.
How did she respond?
She was fully supportive. She'd seen it. She was been trying to tell me for a long time that I wasn't necessarily in a great place. And I look back now and it was absolutely the best decision, other than asking my wife to marry me, the best decision I've ever made in my life.
Wonderful. Well, I mean, it's led you to Grateful Lemon, which is an extraordinary business. Tell us about the name first, and then I'd like to talk about the journey.
Yeah, so it's a story. I suppose it really frames two aspects of it, which is if you lead a life of gratitude and a mindset of gratitude, and you lead a healthy life from a nutritional standpoint, that's a metaphor for the guardrails of how I live my life. Not just me, but how I try and encourage now in terms of what we offer, what I do, and trying to help leaders and their teams to burn bright and not burn out is a way of me framing it on a daily basis.
And the lemon?
A glass of lemon water every morning.
Is that your routine?
I wake up with gratitude and consciously take time to think about all the good things in my life and a glass of lemon water.
Gratitude, so important. Everyone asks about my cancer journey and how I managed that over COVID. And it was as simple as getting up every morning and listing everything I was grateful for. It felt intuitive. It felt right to say, look, I'm grateful to have a roof over my head, especially at a time when many people were suffering. I'm grateful to be having the treatment. I'm grateful that I'm not in pain today. I'm grateful that I have my husband at home. It's a very simple set of actions. It changes your psychology, doesn't it?
And biology.
And biology. Tell me about that.
So it changes. So if you wake up stressed, and this is how I used to, so I'm poacher-turned gamekeeper, right? I used to live a life of the other side of this equation. If you wake up with appreciation versus expectation, which is, I have an equation that A greater than E will equal success and fulfillment, it changes your state that you're in. So we have two nervous systems, and this applies in lots of different ways. Sympathetic, parasympathetic. So sympathetic is your fight or flight. And we're meant to be in that state 5% of the time. So imagine the caveman as a lion coming to, I need to get adrenaline in my system so I can run faster than the lion or get out or fight. And parasympathetic is where we should spend most of the time, which is in, we're in a calm state, we're in an appreciative state, and our body responds very differently. And if we wake with, I must do this, I'm stressed about this, why hasn't that person done that? And you don't take the time to get yourself in the right, in essence, nervous system, then you're starting off, you're never going to get to that point. And you're going to be on this rocky road to somewhere.
Yes, absolutely. You use the word expectation, made me think about customer service theory, where you set expectations for service and you can delight people by exceeding those expectations. What role does expectation play in your parasympathetic?
I'm not saying don't have expectations of yourself and others, but never to the point where you put it above appreciation. I'm not saying don't have high standards, but never to the point where it's above appreciating those that enabled you to get where you've got to or what you need to achieve and everything that's going on around you. You think about the, some of the best service you've had somewhere. You're always appreciative of that, well, you should be, and you recognize it, right? But there's so many other things that happen on a daily basis that you don't even take for granted. Like the fact you've woken up without your back hurting, or you've woken up without any pain. The fact you've woken up, how about being grateful for that? I certainly did not live a life. I didn't really even take the concept of appreciation into account. And now it's the cornerstone.
How do you think that the way we live in the modern world, when you think about how we interact with social media or how we work, how does that affect our expectations and our appreciation?
I think the way we're working now just doesn't work. And I think we'll come on to talk about that in terms of, as part of what we do, we to get everyone to take a survey. So I've gotten more than 10,000 data points now that basically show that 7 out of 10 people in the event hospitality sector are in some way on a road to burnout. So someone asked me, because I did a post recently about 2025 being the year of human sustainability. And they said, well, why 2025? I said, because why not? Why not now? Because actually, if we don't do something now, if we don't create this, start this conversation now, then we'll wait till it's too late. There are a number of people really struggling with the world we live in. Most people believe that the answer to that lies outside of themselves, when actually what I'm trying to educate people on is the answer lies predominantly within themselves to solve it, not to wait for it to someone else to solve it. No one's coming to save you. And so much of what has changed are our habits of how we consume social media, how we consume news, the way we work, the way we sit. We think we're being productive, but we're being inundated by multiple notifications and interruptions. We're being asked to do more from a work perspective. I can't take on more work. Well, actually, there's a myriad of things in there that we can rewrite the way we do it. But that takes personal responsibility. That might be understanding nutrition better. It might be the way I sleep. It might be the way I consume content. It might be the way I think. How often are we taught about going to the gym to work our physical bodies? We're never taught how to work and train our minds. How about we actually think about what we think about? And so how do you help people in that way? And so that comes into the mindset piece, is a mindset of appreciation, because it's all well and good if we could put goals up on the wall and we can work and create a culture at work, but someone's personal thought patterns is their personal reality.
It really is. I really thought about when you said the cavalry is not coming to save you. We all have different epiphany points in our life. And I remember one of mine was in my late 20s. I've been suffering quite badly from depression. Somebody said something and it was quite abrasive and abrupt, but it really gave me internally that little switch. Hang on, the cavalry's not coming to save me. I've got to do something about myself and that will change my reality. But I find a lot of people feel that they're stuck in that reality. How do you get them, without having to have that slap across the face moment, how do you get them to start the change process?
There's three main ways that change happens. The first is you've got a strong mission, a strong purpose mission. Working with a lady who's a senior leader in a company, she always had this mission to be a vision or purpose to be a midwife. So she changed career in a moment. It can happen like that. Rarely happens like that. It often happens when you reach a point, like I did, where the pain of not changing is greater than the pain of the change. Like you go to the doctor and say, you've got lung cancer, shit, I better stop smoking. Or you've got type 2 diabetes, I better change my habit. And you reach that point where you're shocked into making change. The third is through us actually analyzing and taking some time to think about our habits and understanding the power of habits and patterns and rituals of thought and action. And that's where I spend most of my time, is helping people and organizations understand some of the habits that work for them and the habits that don't, and helping them to try and rewire some of those habits.
Amazing. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about how you help individuals or organizations. Which one would you like to talk about first?
So I think it works both ways. Nothing changes till the individual changes. So even for an organization to change, it's people that will make that change. In our industry, the one thing I come across is, oh yeah, but it's the event industry. It's got a certain way of working. You can't change the dynamics of an event, goes late into the night, et cetera. Absolutely. So there's three aspects to the industry. There's the rhythm of the industry, you're not going to change. Nor do we want to change. That is what makes the industry what it is. But the two other aspects are the ways of working and the practices is one. And the other is the individuals and their personal habits and their personalities. Those two pillars of that triangle, we can really home in on and do quite a lot of work to reshape the way we do things. But it comes down to people recognizing and then doing something about it.
So I'm going to come on to individuals in a minute, because I do hear a lot in the industry exactly that phrase, well, events are the way that they are. Therefore, our organizations have to function in the way that we do. I think we're at that pivot point now. Organizations have to change, but they don't know how. What kind of things do you take organizations through to help them?
Let me start with an obvious one, which is, let's say, working practices within an organization around focus. Let's take that as an example. The statistics and science will back this up. We've lost the ability to focus. In fact, some argue we've had it stolen away from us. So let's take a project manager's daily habits at work or routine at work. Might be, I'm working on a budget, I've got a call with a client, and then I've got an internal meeting, and then I'm working on a proposal, whatever it might be. That's, I've got this dynamic of all these different things going on. Fine. That's been the same for the last 30 years. That's been the role of a project manager. Now, today, if that project manager is under the age of 25, 26, and I said it for a reason because the dynamic changes, they'll on average receive 237 notifications in a working day, whether that be emails popping up, WhatsApp messages, SMSs, Amazon driver knocking at the door, the phone going, rarely the phone goes nowadays, but you'll get all these different notifications. I've still got to get that budget done. I've still got to have that team meeting. I've still got to have that proposal. We're inundated with these interruptions, let's call them, notifications, and we answer them. So we'll be in the midst of doing something, and then we'll get a WhatsApp message, and it might be from my mum, and they'll answer it. To the point where our habits have changed so much, without even receiving a notification, you'll pick your phone up to look at it, but nothing's happened. But you still look at why? Because we're in that need of stimulation. Our bodies and brains have changed because our habits have changed. The ways of working have changed. How many times you get to the end of the day, and I hear this so often, get to the end of the day, oh, I haven't achieved anything. Because I'm spinning all these plates. And in the midst of spinning these plates, we've always spun plates, by the way. This industry, even without all of the latest technologies, we spun plates 30 years ago. So that bit's not changed. What's changed is we've been inundated with all of these notifications coming our way, and we're trying to answer all of them at once. And we're trying to do things quicker than we've ever done them before. And we're trying to do all these things to the point where overwhelmed, you get to the end of the day and it's overwhelming. There's a scientific term called the Zeigarnik effect, which in essence is the way our brain will keep open projects, but it will close off things we've done. So if I said to you, what have you done in the last 2 weeks? You probably can't remember what you've done and finished. If I said to you, what have you got on your plate to do? You'll rattle off the 15 things that still need doing. And your brain keeps them open. That's overwhelming. In amongst, I've got this WhatsApp conversation going on with my mom. I've got this group conversation going on with a set of friends. I've got someone else saying about this. I've got another email from a client about this. All while I'm still trying to do this. And the answer is, let's consciously go back to focusing. And if you can do that as an individual, fine. You'll always get the individual, oh, yeah, but I still get the call from the boss. What am I meant to do? Not answer the phone? Fine. I hear that. And you're going to answer the phone. Or you're going to answer that SMS or text message or WhatsApp message, whatever. But if you can do it together as a business, as a team, and everyone sets aside dedicated, even if you said 2 days a week, we're going to have focus days, focus Fridays as an example, and we work in a focused way, I guarantee, well, proven, you'll get to the end of the day feeling much more calm, you've achieved something, and you've probably been way more productive. But that takes a change in habits. Got to want to do it. So that's where I work with teams to go, okay, how could we help you rewire your workday? Because that's where you start, at a organizational level. Also, this falls under the topic of well-being. I'd rather actually just move away from that as a thinking and actually link it to performance, because this is very much about performance. This isn't about creating more well-being initiatives. We don't need more well-being initiatives. We need to make sure we're looking after the well-being of our team. Yeah, right. We just maybe think about doing things differently. Let's embrace the concept of recovery. Let's actually understand and reposition the concept of stress. I have this phrase, master the dance between stress and recovery. If we can help individuals and organizations do that, and it's a dance because it's always moving, very busy. Some are very stressful, and there's other times where it's less so. Sports people are brilliant at taking in the concept of recovery. They're very deliberate about it. There's 50 years of science around, even after the recent football games this week, I heard one of the managers going, yeah, time for them to recover now because we go again in 3 days. So really conscious about recovery. We get to work on a Monday, home, work Tuesday home, didn't think about the concept of recovery. We'll go on site, come back, might have a loo day, and then we go again on the Monday or the next day. But where's the encouragement and acceptance of recovery is a really important part. Where's the individual responsibility to going, I need to make sure I recover so I can perform my best tomorrow?
Well, and recover well, because I was just thinking, you know, a lot of people work their long days and they'll go home, they'll put on Netflix or scroll reels. And is that really recovery or is that just more dopamine?
It's not recovery. And so that's why we see 65% of people have sleep issues in some form or another, whether that be quantity or quality of sleep. And that is one of the foundations.
What is a good practical strategy for recovery?
Everyone's different. It's not rocket science, by the way. The foundations of it are sleep, discipline of sleep and habits at home. Some of the stories I hear are actually quite staggering. And so how do you generate good foundational sleep? It's understanding temperature in your room, understanding use of blue light, understanding use of phones, all basic stuff. And it's not stuff they haven't heard before, but you get people to try and do it. They'll struggle to do it. And that isn't because they can't do it. It's because they don't prioritize sleep. I've got quotes from six of the top performing sports people and business people, and all of them prioritize sleep. That's not just coincidence.
And prioritizing sleep is also about the mindset of prioritizing yourself. And I think that's quite a hard mindset for people within the industry, and understanding that that's also a personal responsibility.
It's also a choice. When you choose to do something or not to do something, you're also choosing to do something else, and that is a choice. So if I choose to have, some say, oh yeah, but I'm on site and I know I've got to be busy tomorrow, but the client wants to go out or the team want to go for a drink. It's a choice. What are you having to drink? Do you have to have alcohol? Do you need to go for the drink? Are you prioritizing getting up at 5 a.m.? Or are you going to go, that's fine, and I'm going to do both, but I recognize next night I need to do something about it. We don't do that. Choice is what we put in our mouth, nutrition-wise. Man, at times I've been on site and you walk into the office, team office on site, and it, excuse my French, it's full of shit. If I said to that leadership team, tell you what, let's fill everybody with poison. Why? Because they like it. Would you do it? You wouldn't do it. Yet we do. Why? Because we've always done it. There's so much nutritional advice now. And actually, I was doing some work with a nutritional psychiatrist, a direct correlation between what we eat and our mental state. And there's science now around, they've done a study on schizophrenia, 100 patients with schizophrenia. They took their gut microbiome through stool samples. And just by looking at the stool of 100 patients with and without schizophrenia, they identified 99 of those 100. Because their gut microbiome, their makeup was very different. The two biggest contributors to gut microbiome is what we eat and how we manage stress. And a big contributor to how we manage stress, which we can talk about, is one of those foundational elements, is sleep. Where does the responsibility for that sit? 100% with the individual.
Amazing. I hope a lot of the individuals who are listening to this podcast understand that it's their personal responsibility as well as the organization's responsibility to create a better focused environment for themselves and better focused habits. Mike, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast. Really appreciate it. I love that you're doing work both at an individual level and a company level to help people. And through Grateful Lemon, your company, I look forward to 2025 being the year of human sustainability. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. I'm here on the show floor with Bo Kruger, who has just given a talk on the gravity of life, how to grow from adversity, stress, and uncertainty. Now, Bo is a brilliant human. Not only is he an expert in positive psychology, well-being, and resilience, he has a whole host of unique experiences that he can draw on, including being an ice swimmer, an improvisational comedian, and a mountain climber. He currently serves on the board of the Danish Knowledge Center for Positive Psychology. So it is an absolute pleasure to have him here on the podcast. Bo, welcome.
Thank you. Oh, what an introduction.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. So tell me, I believe that sometimes we come to this sense of how we grow from adversity later on in life. But that isn't the case for you, is it?
No, I don't think so. Maybe you'd have grown stronger, but if I think back, I would say it started when I was 12 years old. My father, he came to me and he said, you want to join this race? That's a race in Denmark. It was the longest bicycle race in all of Denmark. By the time, it was 300 kilometers.
Amazing. And that is long.
Yeah, especially when you're 12 years old. And I had no idea what it was. And I said, yeah, I can do that. From there on, we did that for the next 23 years. I really learned then that sometimes you have to suffer to grow afterwards. When I was young and sometimes when life got hard, I always thought about, okay, and no matter how hard I think life is, I can always do that bike race. So I have something inside me that I can draw out whenever I need it.
What was it about the bike race that your dad wanted you to do? Do you think he knew that he was building that in you, or was it a fundraiser, or what started it?
I think for him it was because my father didn't have many friends, so he needed someone to do it with. So.
But how wonderful that he chose his son. I think that's really lovely. Does he know that he's ignited this passion for adversity in you by doing this?
Yeah, he's dead now, but even on his deathbed, you could see he had this resilience within him. So I remember the day before he died, we were planning the whole, you know, funeral and everything. But I think it runs in the family. Always been a very stubborn family and very strong in those kind of situations. And definitely I learned that from him. And he showed me in real life how you can do it.
I love that you use the word stubborn almost in the same context as resilience. Do you think there's an element of stubbornness to resilience?
Yeah, I think sometimes there is. So if you do a race 300 meters, or now I'm preparing for 500 meters ice swimming, you get to a point where you don't want to do it anymore. You think it's horrible. You think, why am I doing this? That's where you need stubbornness. I tell people, and I also did that in my talk, that it has to feel uncomfortable to become comfortable. And sometimes we think everything has to be comfortable, also in events. So we try to make everything nice and neat. But actually, sometimes where you learn the most, where you grow the most, is where you are really uncomfortable. And the reward comes afterwards.
We talk about this in business all the time. We talk about the larger the risk, the larger the potential gain. And also Carol Dweck's work about the comfort zone and the safety zone and the panic zone, you know, like how to grow and stretch. We have to go out of our comfort zone into our stretch zone, but not as far as our panic zone.
It's difficult to know exactly where that is. If you never touch the limit, you never find out. For me, it's very tangible in the sense that, for example, I do ice swimming. And it actually works like this, that the colder the water is, the bigger the benefit afterwards.
I have to say, the concept of ice swimming fills me with dread. What was your first one like?
Actually, that was a kid again. I grew up in Greenland, and I remember I was maybe 7 years old. We went down, me and some friends, and we went swimming among the icebergs. And my parents, they got furious because, of course, it was dangerous and all of that. But I don't remember what it was like. But,
is it easier as a child? Do you think the filter about what the danger is completely different?
Maybe as kids, maybe you are adventurous, and so you don't think so much about the consequences. But when you do ice swimming, something interesting happens. So first, when you dip into the water, you activate the sympathetic nervous system, which is the stress system. And that lasts for about 30 seconds. And after that, you shift to the parasympathetic, which is the relaxed system. If you dare to stay more than 30 seconds, maybe 1 minute, even up to 2 minutes, then you will actually start relaxing in the water, which is totally counterintuitive, but that's what happens.
So part of the reason I was asking about children and that idea of play, of course, you are an improvisational comedian. So a lot of that is about play. Tell me a bit about your work there and how that gets you out of bad stress and good stress and where that lies in your comedy.
The main rule of improv comedy theater, which is a theater without scripts. I don't know how many times I've been on a stage with an audience and I had no idea what was going to happen, which I think must be a nightmare for event planners because they're used to planning and planning. So here it's totally opposite. But the number one rule in improv comedy is the rule of yes and. That's how you co-create with other people, meaning that, like we're doing now in a conversation, you say something, I accept your question and I add something. If I was refusing, saying no, but, then we could not have a conversation going. So yes and means that you very fast accept the situation and that's a yes, and then you add something to the situation. I found out you can use that everywhere in your life. I even wrote a book about that.
Did you? What's the book called?
Indiana Jones of the Office.
Oh, I love that. All of that in business, I think, is incredibly, incredibly important. And especially important for event organisers. You've just said we spend our time planning. I often find that we come alive on site because there are things we have to solve and resolve in the moment.
That's true. A lot of event planners are really good at planning, but they also have to be good at improvising because that's the only thing we can be sure of, that something will happen that you didn't plan for. And I think a yes and mindset is extremely helpful in that situation. So if you're very good at accepting what happened fast, the yes, then you can do something about it, and that's the end. And We often talk about when we get stressed or meet the danger that we have a flight and fight response. But that's only part of the truth, because a more common response that we don't talk so much about is something we call the challenge response. So you step up to the challenge, you start looking for solutions and start becoming creative. I think we're good at that in this industry. So, because all the time, you know, we have to make up things when things go wrong. I used to call that being a gaffer genius. So you have to make up something out of what is there at hand.
A gaffer genius. Yeah. Yes. A gaffer is our best friend in this industry. I can't tell you how many things it solves. So that's a wonderful, wonderful analogy. I really love that. So I've not heard of the challenge response. Of course, you always hear about the flight or flight and what your amygdala does. What happens in your brain in the challenge response?
I'm not a brain expert as such, but in general, what happens when you get stressed is that you first of all release the typical stress hormones, which are cortisol and adrenaline. But you also actually release some of what you would call the relaxed hormones, like dopamine, serotonin, and noradrenaline. And then also oxytocin, which you probably heard about. Some people call it the love hormone, which is actually a stress hormone, which most people don't know. But the reason why we release it when we get stressed is because from evolution, we learned that if you are in trouble, it's better to collaborate. So it helps you to reach out to other people. So can you see the benefit? So you get all the stress hormones that makes you focus. Then you get the happy hormones like dopamine that makes you open and be happy. And then you got the oxytocin that makes you want to connect with other people. I mean, that's a great cocktail for event people.
It's amazing. Yeah. It almost sounds like there is no such thing as bad stress.
There is, but it's much, much less than people think. And now the interesting finding is that there was a huge research in the US in 1998 where they asked 30,000 people, how stressed are you and what is your belief around stress, that it's bad for you or that it's good for you? And they found that if you believe it's bad for you, it increased your chances of dying with, I think, 41%. Whereas if you believe it was good for you, you were actually more healthy than the average person. So much was about your perception of stress. If we change our perception, it's very helpful. But when that said, there is a chunk of stress which is dangerous. So if you experience trauma, abuse, violence, or if you never have time to recover, unfortunately, you see a lot of that also in this industry, that people go from one event to another without having downtime. That's where it gets dangerous.
What kind of roadmap for recovery would you recommend to event professionals?
We know, for example, mindfulness and all those kind of things are good for many people. Personally, I'm not a big fan of mindfulness. I get bored. So for me, it's better to do some physical training. And actually, for example, if you do something like ice swimming, what happens is that you go from the head into the body. A lot of the stress we have is from rumination and overthinking. So if we can turn off those thoughts, and we can use it, often do that if we immerse ourselves into something where your body or something else gets in focus. For me, it's not about giving the right prescription, but rather about finding what works for you, what's fit for you. You like improv comedy? So you experience also the magic of being in the flow zone with a group of other people.
Yes.
And that's amazing for you and me. For some other people, it would be not so nice.
Completely the wrong thing. It is about what gets you into something that is very absorbing and takes your attention. So it's the resetting of the mind through movement and being in a different space, which in one instance could be ice swimming, in one could be going for a walk, it could be going for a jog. It's just the combination of the two that could be a real reset between going from one event to the next.
I'm sure that physical activity, and sometimes you say, well, if people are depressed and they feel like they're walking in circles, we just tell them, keep walking. At one point you will walk out of that depression, especially if you walk in the nature, something happens there. So also, have you heard about the Japanese concept of forest bathing? You immerse yourself in nature, and I think it helps us relax a lot. So simply going out in nature, take a walk, if you're not into ice swimming, and most people are not into ice swimming. So, yeah.
I think there's a revolution happening, and you could definitely, definitely lead it. I do have one more question.
Please.
Which is, you have on my notes here, there is a lovely word, and I love hybrid words, and this word is anti-fragility. Did you coin that?
It actually comes from a philosopher, Nassim Nicholas Taleb. I don't know if you know him.
No.
He's also the guy who wrote about black swans, unknowns. I'm working on a book myself now, in Danish, unfortunately, about the topic. But the idea is we often talk about fragility. So you break under stress. So it could be like a porcelain cup could break if you lose it on the floor. And then you talk about resilience, which means that it doesn't break, but nothing happens to it. Mm-hmm. So that would be a plastic cup. Whereas anti-fragility means that you actually grow from stress and adversity. That's also, as I said before, about the mindset. If you have a yes and mindset or a growth mindset, or if you look at things as an opportunity to learn something new, that's very helpful. And you can have anti-fragility on the personal level, but you can also have it on the group level. So if you are in an environment where people are good at supporting each other and also accepting failure, for example, and we have a term, I don't know if you heard about that, called psychological safety from Amy Edmondson from Harvard, which is about creating an environment where you can be candid and talk about failure, but also things that are difficult. It turned out that those environments are very healthy when things get difficult.
I would love to see more environments, work environments, adopt psychological safety in the future. I think it is an incredibly important part of anti-fragility and resilience. Well, thank you. I feel like this whole podcast has been a call to learning something new, going out of your comfort zone, to understand how to put yourself under good stress and grow. I'm always reminded of the analogy of being a diamond, when diamonds are made under immense pressure. Let us all be diamonds, I think. So thank you very much, Bo, for joining me today. I really appreciate it. And thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Cheers. Loved that episode. There has never been a more important time to talk about the ways that we work. It's really important to understand in our industry that events themselves and the deadline-driven nature of our work is not going to change. And I am a firm believer of taking control of what we can control. And that is our ways of working and our personal responsibility. It's a massive discussion in the industry at the moment, whether we work from home or whether we work in the office, and about our well-being and about work-life balance. But we can really take control of that by talking about what personal responsibility we can take. And I think both Mike and Bo not only gave us tactics, but tons of food for thought that could really, really help us. But let's not wait until we burn out. You can cultivate a growth mindset right now by reading the work of Carol Dweck, as Bo and I talked about, or the book that he recommended, Anti-Fragile by Nicholas Taleb, about cultivating resilience, both organizationally and personally. Both Mike and Bo talked about seeing stress as a positive and how we can cultivate that mindset through practicing gratitude, which is something that I talk about in another episode when I talk about my cancer journey. But let's not just talk about stress as a positive, but also about recovery through sleep or through play, or even using ice swimming or ice baths, as both Mike and Bo do. Whatever you decide to do between now and the next episode, enjoy it. Thank you so much for listening. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please share.
Hi, everyone. Claudia Hall here, Exhibition Director for IBTM World. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast, New in Events. Your host for season two is Shanali Devereaux, and executive producer is Mike Fletcher. Don't forget to mark your calendar for IBTM World in Barcelona, taking place from the 18th to 20th of November. And if you found this episode insightful, please share it with anyone else you think may appreciate it. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.